Hello and welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. I'm going to keep it short and brief because we still have a lot to find out about what's going to happen in the new Trump administration on student loans, orders that come out of courts, and the new administration, as well as what's going to happen out of Congress. So let me tell you what I'm watching for, because it's a really big deal what is going to happen in the next probably 100 days on student loans and the future of student loans in America. A couple things that I'm watching for specifically. Maybe the first thing that might change is how fast they're processing things that probably don't impact you a ton if you're listening to this podcast. It does impact some people, and that's borrower defense repayment. So if you went to a school that defrauded you, if you went to a program that was not good, if you went to one of the schools in the Sweet B Cardona list, we're going to see, I think, first how fast they're going to pull back on processing forgiveness if you went to a school that didn't provide a great product. That's going to be kind of a temperature test for how far they're going to go and how fast they're going to go in other areas. So I'm looking for that. The big thing that's going to impact the vast majority of people, though, is going to be the GOP reconciliation bill that they're going to use. It's called a budget reconciliation bill. Now, what that means is you can use think about it like a legislative maneuver to bypass the 60 votes you need to break a filibuster in the Senate. And it's called budget reconciliation. And the only reason you're allowed to do it is to do things that impact spending. So you can't use it for everything, but both parties are using it for more and more over time. And you can only do up to two budget reconciliations, period. So if you basically think that you're going to see anything at all come out of Congress on student loans, it does have to be within the context of the budget reconciliation bill, because it's very unlikely they're going to get bipartisan consensus on overhauling the whole program. So if you see anything happen with student loans, it probably would be in a budget reconciliation bill. And so let me explain what they're talking about for that bill. People that don't follow politics super closely, I don't blame you at all for not caring about what this is, but it does matter a ton for whether or not they're going to pass any student loan legislation. And the reason is they're talking about trying to stuff everything into, quote, one big, beautiful bill, right? Or do you break it up into two bills, have one bill that's more immigration focused so they can get a quick win, and then save the big tax bill for later? And that's the big debate right now happening in Republican circles. And they're leaning towards one big, quote, one big, beautiful bill, right? But the problem is they have razor-thin majorities in the House. Now, the House is probably going to hold together pretty intensely because they have no other choice on the Republican side because their seat margin is so small. But I do think that you're going to see a ton of pressure if you come out with one big bill. There's going to be a ton of interest groups that are going to be ferociously lobbying against different provisions in this bill. It's going to be very difficult to pass. They will pass something, but the question is do they have to pull a bunch of stuff out of it to drop some of the key groups that are going to oppose the bill to get it through? And student loans could easily be one of those things that gets whittled down to very little at the end of the day. So the chair of the Education Committee in the House has said she wants to get reconciliation and student loan reform accomplished in the reconciliation bill. And so what might that look like? Well, she proposed something called the College Cost Reduction Act, CCRA. This bill would create a new income-driven repayment. Now, the good news is it says for all new borrowers after a certain date. So presumably everybody, as in prior Republican bills that have proposed to overhaul income-driven repayment, presumably everybody before the date the bill goes into effect would be set up with one set of rules. People that are after that date would be set with a different set of rules if that were to happen. Now, one of the proposals that the GOP wants to do is eliminate time-based student loan forgiveness. And their proposal is to basically make people pay until they've paid back their principal plus the interest that would have been owed under a standard 10-year plan. So think about like amortizing a loan over 10 years. Under the GOP proposal, you'd have to pay until you've paid that amount of money. And the GOP's proposal in the College Cost Reduction Act would throw in some, basically you can think about it like a 401k match or a principal assistance, but only if your payment is above a certain level does it really amount to anything. So if your payment is somewhat significant, you would get a matching contribution on your loans until your required payment is like less than two times the accruing interest or some sort of formula like that. And so the idea is if you are making a payment, you should get some sort of matching contribution to your principal, and they're going to make sure your interest doesn't grow, similar protections on interest to the save plan rules. Now, the really interesting thing, I've looked at this really carefully, and I've actually built models for it, the GOP's proposal for income-driven repayment. It's actually quite similar in cost to the save plan. It just maybe tilts the benefits a little bit more towards people with higher debt. It tilts the benefits towards people with higher income, but it still preserves a massive student loan forgiveness pathway towards paying back your loans. In fact, there's a really kind of perverse incentive to stretch your loans out as long as possible in that plan, because you want to get as much contributions from the government as possible. If they're going to make matching contributions, would you rather pay your loans off really fast and not get those matching contributions? Or would you stretch out your payments, reduce your AGI, try to be really strategic in getting the lowest AGI possible so you can stretch out your payments for as long as possible to get the most subsidies possible? So I think that whenever Congress tries to come up with a plan that allows for some generosity towards borrowers, or whatever anybody's coming up with these days, it really does seem like it's a plan that offers a very good pathway to forgiveness, even under the GOP's proposal, which is not going to probably go through exactly as is. So I'm watching on the legislative front, when you have that reconciliation bill come out, the Republican top line has proposed trillions of dollars in cuts in spending. Probably about 40% of that's Medicare, and then 20% of that's like this other category, and student loans are about 200 to 300 billion in the spending cuts in their proposal. These are top line figures, right? And what happens is the leadership will pass off those top line figures to the committees and say, hey, figure the language out. And so if you think about, well, how would they cut back $200 to $300 billion in student loans? My guess is they would just do it by the easiest path possible to say, okay, we're repealing SAVE. That was going to cost $400 billion. Oh, look, we've saved $300 billion, even though the courts were going to invalidate it anyway, right? Or you could say, well, we're going to eliminate the Grad Plus program, eliminate the Parent Plus program. That might be something they would do too, except every time they try to eliminate the Plus Loan program, universities absolutely come out of the woodwork screaming like their hair's on fire, because they know in some cases it would be an existential threat to their university's functioning. I've been to several talks by senior congressional staffers in front of like industry kind of conferences from representing both sides of the aisle. They both agreed, when I listened to those conversations, that some of the nation's most prestigious brand name universities, many of which play in college football playoffs, let's put it that way, are the leading opposition to eliminating PLUS loans, because this is kind of how they finance the big, lavish sort of budgets of the entire university, is through the PLUS loan program, because, you know, your typical family can't come up with $20,000 a year for tuition and much less room and board. So these are some of the things that we're monitoring on the legislative front to see how much of the proposals make it into a reconciliation bill. What can they actually accomplish in a reconciliation bill? My operating assumption has always been they can't accomplish a whole lot on student loans, because a lot of the student loan language is pretty specifically defined as to what it is. It's in the statute. Presumably, if you were to change it in the statute, you'd have to get 60 votes, because the way I think about it is the IBR statute was written because they had 60 votes in the Senate during the ACA, you know, sort of Obamacare fight to make that the law of the land. They needed 60 votes in the Senate in the time to get that through, and they did. So the question is are the rules still valid? I mean, there's a lot of things back then that are different now. For example, rules on filibustering, court judges are totally different. I mean, so, you know, the stuff that you can filibuster has gotten smaller, right? So the question would be, with all the political changes in the Senate moving more and more towards 50%, you're getting a lot more done with 50% than the 60 votes that you need previously. Is that going to hold up? Will the filibuster slow down the Republicans because they control all of the levers of power at the moment? The other big comment I wanted to make is the judiciary. So if you think about the judiciary, you've got a 6-3 conservative majority in the Supreme Court. You've got a court case that could be dropped at any moment. So apologies if it came out right after I record this, but the 8th Circuit's eventually, theoretically, going to make a decision on the SAVE plan. It is possible, of course, that they might just continue to drag their feet, waiting on the new administration to say something, because I guess that they're just deferring to the new administration as to what it wants to do. The case is Missouri v. Biden, right? In the 8th Circuit, that's what the case is really called. And it's state of Missouri suing the Biden administration over, you know, what they've done with student loans. And so if there's no more Biden administration, does that case just get ruled on? And then is somebody going to appeal it? Would the Trump administration then appeal that case? Like, if they get a favorable ruling that they like, maybe not, right? If they get a ruling and the Trump administration doesn't fully like it, they might be able to try to get some sort of congressional legislation passed if they don't like the ruling. But there's probable cause to believe that they would like the ruling if it's coming from a conservative court. So the last thing I'll mention about the executive branch, it takes time to get nominees installed into departments. It takes time for the old guard to resign and the new guard to get put in place. The IDR payment count tracker is live on Student Aid. So if you haven't gone into studentaid.gov yet, I would highly encourage you to do so. So if you go into studentaid.gov, go to my aid data, and then go and see if you can find that IDR payment count tracker so you can see how close you are to getting the 20 or 25 year forgiveness if that's what you're going for and not payoff or PSLF. Now, the question is, do a lot of those reforms Biden administration did through the IDR account adjustment, do they stick around? Obviously, if the Biden administration can just put up a payment count tracker with rules that they came up with the IDR account adjustment completely outside of the normal process for rulemaking, could the Trump administration say, hey, these payment counts are all wrong, we want to reset these? I don't think that's going to happen simply because it's probably too much work. I think that you'd have to have a court case to challenge it. I think the Trump administration would have to explicitly go out of their way to try to identify all the adjustments that were made and then undo them, which I think would be a Herculean task, which is why I think the Biden administration did it this way in the first place, because they knew it'd be so hard to undo. That's why the Republican opponents of SAVE and such sued at the last second to block that rule going into place, because they probably thought that if that rule was actually fully allowed to be implemented, it'd be very difficult to undo it later. And so that's why you saw the court challenges at the last second. So executive branch, you've got obviously the DOGE agency, right? The Department of Governmental Efficiency. This is a group, it's, you can think about it kind of like a extra governmental think tank, really, that's coming up with ideas for policy that they want to push through. And one of those ideas is massive spending cuts. And the biggest spending cuts are targeted on healthcare-related things, Medicaid, Medicare, et cetera. So it'll be interesting to see how much of that goes through. And also, you've got the tax cuts that are expiring at the end of 2025, so they have to come out with a bill in 2025. It's a must-do. They have no other choice but to pass a major bill to change the tax code. Otherwise, taxes soar for a ton of people, especially higher-income people. And that's, you know, you've got unified Republican control, so that's not going to happen. They're going to write a bill. And then the question is, of course, what about student loans get tossed into that bill? And they only have, like I said, maximum two bites at the apple to get a fully Republican-only supported bill passed on student loan legislation. So that's what I'm going to be watching really closely for. Watch the executive actions. Watch some of the stuff to take an early temperature test, again, on how fast they pull back processing on borrower defense for people who went to low-quality schools or schools that defrauded them. You're just essentially looking for indicators of how aggressive the Trump administration is going to be pulling back on their generosity compared to what the Biden administration did on student loans. Of course, we're going to be covering the whole thing for you. If you want to get the latest on all these updates and stuff, keep following the podcast. Obviously, check out our socials, and you can also look at the email list for the weekly update we do on Thursday. This pod hasn't gotten a review maybe in a little bit. So if you are feeling so inclined or you're listening on a place where you can leave a review for the Student Loan Planner podcast, that's obviously much appreciated. If you want other people to get help like this during a very unpredictable time for borrowers. And finally, the last thing I'll tell you is be ready to recertify your income with not a lot of notice. You want to make sure you're paying attention to your tax returns this year, how you file. Just be ready to be suddenly told, hey, court says, hey, SAVE's legal, switch everybody to IBR. So you have to be ready for that just in case that happens with the courts this year. That's the last little parting bit of advice I'd give. If you need a consult, you can get it at studentloanplanner.com/book. And as always, if you want to leave a question for a future pod episode, studentloanplanner.com/voicemail. I'm Travis of Student Loan Planner Podcast. Thank you all so much for listening.